T-minus 3, 2, 1, 0.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Launch Sequence Podcast. My camera, my computer is lagging behind with us, but as long as the audio is good, we're good. This is your favorite space game podcast, mainly focusing on Star Citizen and pulling some guests from the community to talk about whatever is going on or what we're interested in. Today, I have brought Zero State with me, who I usually associate with combat gameplay, but for some reason I've been hearing a lot about like hands when it comes to discussion about you and from Jared and Inside Star Citizen, so I'm going to need an answer on that. But thank you for joining me today. Looking forward to our discussion. How you doing?
Oh, it'll be great. I'm doing good. I have been very busy recently, but been doing good. It's been exciting to see what's happening with Star Citizen and just gaming in general. But and spring is here in Minnesota, so life is good at the most for the
That's
most
good
part
to hear.
At the moment. Yeah,
dude, spring's weird here. I don't know about you, but it's been so overcast during this month, and it was like good in April. And then May hit, and it started to get cloudy, which is not normal here. Are you getting normal stuff, at least?
Normal, but it's been more rainy than we expected. But we had a super dry winter here, so normally we get, over the winter, maybe 2-3 feet of snow total, right? Like, it doesn't stay, it'll melt and come and go and stuff. This year we got maybe, 1 foot, maybe less. It like snowed like twice here, which is really weird. And so it was super dry, so all the farmers in the Midwest of the United States are very worried about the water table is really low.
Yeah.
And now it's been raining, so they're happy again, hopefully. Okay, as long as they have their seeds in the soil, the crops in the soil, then
get that spring joy. Good for them.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been good. It's been very green here, which is good.
Good to hear. How about Star Citizen? That been pretty green for you on the up and up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, 323 has been exciting for a lot of people. A lot of the big features. I've been pretty optimistic about 323. Overall, I think that's a good direction for the game. I think it's been an exciting culmination since CitizenCon that we've seen some of these big announcements and we've seen, hey, they're pulling devs, over to back to Star Citizen, and it's like we're seeing the results of that, so
yeah. Agreed. Before we get into the discussion about Star Citizen, so for anybody who's tuning in today, we're talking actually a pretty big topic. Really want to dive into the aspects of an MMO, what Star Citizen is right now, what Star Citizen is aiming to be, and how that compares to other MMOs. Zero State, we were having a pretty good talk about this and about just how other games do it and what Star Citizen is kind of needing to do to get in that direction. I think this would be a really interesting one to talk with other people about. But before we get into that, I want to talk about Helldivers a little bit. Because this
Helldivers.
Everybody has been jumping into this game, yeah. And it's pretty cool. Yeah. I love the design of it. I love what it does. I love watching it. I don't really play it that much. But they've got a lot of stuff going on with it. And I know you have something to say about what's been going on with Helldivers.
Yeah, so Helldivers is one of the best games that I've played in a long time with my friends. I have a tough time playing games like that alone, really any game alone these days. But unless it's like a really like a single player, obviously like a single player linear story, like it tells a good story, I like playing it. But Helldivers, yeah. It tells a funny story, but the gameplay that you have is like blowing up with your friends, basically, right? Like that's the fun part of Helldivers. The problem with Helldivers right now, and whenever you guys are seeing this podcast, it may have progressed. but Helldivers 2 has a publisher. And that should say a lot right there, because publishers are evil for the most part. I should say evil, but Sony particularly likes to keep everything Sony. They think they're Apple. And listen here, Sony, you're not. Okay, you're not Apple. Stop trying to be Apple. Sony.
They were kind of Apple before Apple, huh?
But it's not the same,
Like yeah,
Apple
they lost that,
has the clout to be like, we're going to use the lightning cable for 20 years and you can't stop it. You know what I mean? Sony.
Thank God we did.
Yeah, I know. Sony, on the other hand, is like, we use the same computers you use, but we're going to use different SD cards for our digital cameras because we're Sony and we want you to buy our ecosystem, right? Stuff like that. It just bugs
me
about
back
Sony.
To that era right before smartphones started to get popular when you had all these different phone designs and every freaking charger was different. And
yes. Yeah, Sony used to sell digital cameras. Well, they still do, I think. I know they do because I'm staring at one right now, come to think of it. But they had digital cameras and they only made their digital cameras to work with their SD card, or it was like called like an MMC card or something. Like, I can't remember what the name was. But it was a certain form factor. And then their computers, so they had Sony laptops and stuff, only had that one card reader. So if you wanted to use an SD card with a different digital camera brand, you'd have to get like a USB card reader to use it with a Sony laptop. It was the dumbest thing ever. They lost tons of customers over it, in my opinion, for both the cameras and their laptops. And it's just stuff like that that Sony, for the long... Every time I hear something about Sony, I'm like, they're killing another thing, aren't they? It just seems like that's what they do. The Spider-Man stuff, where like Sony owned a bunch of rights to that or something like that. I can't remember what the whole story was there.
Oh boy, they just didn't capitalize on it for the longest
time.
Yeah,
and it's like they don't have the... I don't know what the word is. Like, they don't have the stones, or they don't have the capital to really capitalize on owning a cool thing. But they want to keep that cool thing, you know? So it's like they are damaging the cool thing and how cool it could be because they want this lockdown ownership of it, you know? And I think that's exactly the Helldiver, what's happening with Helldivers 2. So the story is that in Helldivers 2, you now have to create or log into a PSN account, so a Sony account, before you can play. And that's even if you bought it on Steam, which is pretty weird. I mean, there are a couple of games, I think, that do that. But that's pretty odd.
That you can kind of standard, no?
Yeah. Microsoft does it a lot, but Sony also has, like, security issues, and people have concerns about that. Plus, it's just weird. And the biggest problem is that there are many countries where you can't have a PSN account.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Like, if you bought Helldivers in a certain country, there's a big list of them out there somewhere, and you were playing it in that country, you can't play it anymore because you're going to have to log into a Sony account and you can't, or maybe you'll have to use a VPN. Like, I know one person in particular who on the stream, it was just last night. I mean, this is Friday, it's Friday night. They came into the chat and they were like, I can't play Helldivers anymore because I have this, I could VPN and try to, you know, figure that out with a PSN account, but I am afraid to do that. I don't want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that sucks. That's a really sucky thing to do. Like, if you can't make it available where people paid money for this game, why are you doing it? Especially because it's not something that is mandatory. Like, it's not necessary to do this because people have been playing the game without it. You know, it's just Sony being selfish and being like, we want people to log into to our PSN accounts. We want our PSN account concurrency to go up so we can feed them ads or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So that's an angle with the ads. I could see it both ways. As a publisher, they're probably the ones who are like covering the infrastructure of the game, right? In terms of like the online services and stuff.
Probably, yeah.
And they probably are like handling the friends and all this kind of stuff in the back end. I mean, Steam has their own friend system, but like the Sony account thing probably is a long-term plan to handle all the accounts. So I can understand them being like, hey, if we're going to shell out all the money for this service, we should have players using it. Because I would expect Cloud Imperium Games to want people to have an RSI account if they launched like Arena Commander on Steam. Do you think they would do that, or do you think they'd keep
it? Well, yeah, but that's it. It's a, if you can play Star Citizen everywhere, if there aren't countries where, if like, let's say you buy Star Citizen and then you want to play Arena Commander, but CIG says, oh, by the way, you have to sign into an RSI account, and you can't in your country, you've paid the money and now you can't play the game.
Yeah,
because of something that's not arbitrary, but relatively arbitrary.
Yep.
That's a problem. It's not so much of a, like, the PSN account, I don't think, is a big problem if everybody everywhere can do it. And they might, maybe they'll figure that out. I don't know if that's something that they'll work on, but maybe by the time that, you know, dear viewers see this video, right?
Hopefully.
It's, yeah, that might get sorted out, or they might backtrack things or whatever. But like when you put player, like that's a big like moral issue for me, is like when you put a part of your player base, and maybe a significant part, I don't know, in a box that says you bought the game and now you can't play it because of something that we chose to do. I don't think you should be able to do that. I think that should be a legal issue. I mean, maybe those people will get refunds. Maybe they'll have to ask for refunds. I don't know. To me, that's a problem. You sold a person a thing and now you made it so that they can't play it. And
I agree.
That sucks for two groups of people particularly. It sucks for the player base first and foremost. And it sucks for the developers who worked really hard on Helldivers 2 and have nothing to do with the networking side of it, you know?
Yeah, now they get the blowback publishing side of it. For the news.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are, at this point in time, there have been some help. One of the community managers was kind of like angsty about it and wasn't being a very good community manager in like a Discord or something like that. So they took some flack for that too. But like I said, it's Sony being Sony, and it sucks. I think the worst... Helldivers was that open, like, this game is for everybody kind of mentality, and now it's literally not for everybody, and that's frustrating.
There's definitely a part of it is that, I think, is it was this, it's this game that feels indie, and I believe before this was self-published, right? The first Helldivers?
I'm not sure on that. Okay. I don't know, but that sounds right.
Okay. It was at least, it was viewed as, I mean, the narrative is like, oh, Pal World is huge. It's this small game that came out of nowhere and did custom stuff. We love it. What was the other one? There was another game that came out this year that wasn't big, but ended up getting popular. It's like Pal World, Helldivers, and something else.
Yeah, I forget it.
But, so it's not,
yeah, I know what you're talking about, though. Yeah.
They come out and they do this thing as like a small game, and then Sony comes in here and is like, hold on, this isn't a small game. Sign in for my platform. I get that, especially with the timing. Like you made a point. If they had done this from the beginning, it wouldn't have caught people off guard who bought the game. And that's an interesting topic because it depends on what it is that's causing the people to be left behind. Because there's definitely like these games get developed and they continue to develop. And as the tech develops, people who have certain computers can't play anymore. It's like how able are you as a company to start restricting your player base even though they paid for your game?
Yeah, well, and it's a lot easier with things like Xbox and PlayStation because everybody who has an Xbox has a Microsoft account, right? Like you do, because you have to sign into your Xbox. So if you have an Xbox, game developers who develop on Xbox have to make their games for Xbox, and they have to make their games for people who play on Xbox. So that means all those games use a Microsoft account, right? Like that's just, you use a Microsoft account to play games on an Xbox. So it makes the whole situation like a non-issue. It's just something that people don't think about because it's always that way, whether there's a publisher or not or whatever. With PC gaming, you can make a program that people download on their PC and play completely independently of the internet and call it a video game. And it's just a very different landscape. And I think developers and publishers especially, are not very good at navigating that because, like you said, with the differing of hardware and all these different things, you want to make your game accessible, but you also want to make the game yours, and I get that. And going back to the concurrency thing, like Helldivers 2 is one of those, anytime you see a game that it comes out and then the devs come out with a tweet or a statement or whatever that says, wow, thank you for the crazy response to the game. We're beefing up our servers because we didn't expect this. They didn't expect the game to be as big as it was, you know? And they didn't expect, it was just perfect timing with Helldivers because Helldivers is a lot like, the other bug game that people are going to roast me for not remembering the name of, Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot like, I mean, it's not the same, but it has the same kind of concepts and things like that. And it's, Helldivers 2 was just massively popular right out the gate. Just something about the satire of it or the visuals or something about it just made it more fun for players.
Good game.
Yeah, and I have a tough time with it because yesterday morning, I was kind of reading some of the drama, and I was like, whatever, it's fine. It's just a PSN account. And then I read the drama about like, oh, there's people in countries who just won't be able to play, like, or can't play.
That's the big part.
And then there was another bit of drama where Sony had on their website, like, signing into a PSN account is optional for all our games. And then they changed that, like, they changed their website to reflect the new rules, like, sneaky, right? They kind of changed it to say, like, some of our games require a PSN, like, to be, and then they were like referencing it to people of like, see, our rules say And that is one of the most frustrating little bait and switches where it's like, you guys, like, people have the Wayback Machine. People can look at the, like, source code of your websites to see that you changed stuff, you idiots. And so it's like they're doing these sneaky things. And now I'm like, I kind of want to uninstall Helldivers because A, they're doing this sneaky crap. And B, there's people who can't play the game and they don't seem to care about that yet. And it's like, I don't know if I want to play that game. And it's really frustrating because I like the game. And I like that it seemed the developers were good. It's just the stuff that they're doing with their publishers, like, it just, it kind of gives me like this moral heart issue, you know?
Yeah. And it's, you can really be making a good game and we see this all the time. A lot of good games get just cratered by publisher demands. And it's not always a publisher. Sometimes it's a developer, but like MechWarrior Online?
MechWarrior Online was one of those games that had a, I forget the names of everything, it's been years, but they had a publisher for a long time that they ended up getting out from under. And as soon as they got out from under the publisher, they started making the game they wanted to make. And that was so frustrating to watch for like, I don't know, four or five something years.
Yeah.
Where it was just this drop in, blow stuff up, drop in, blow stuff up. That was the whole game for like four something, for a long time. Finally, they got out from underneath the publisher and then they started making it like an MMO out of it almost, where you could like take territory from the other factions and stuff. And it was really cool, but it was far too late at that point because they lost a lot of their player base over those years, you know?
Yeah. And there's just, there's so many things that can happen that have nothing to do with the game itself that ruin the game. And I do wonder, we're looking at Squadron 42 coming out soon. And I think we're all pretty, I think everybody who's kind of paying a lot of attention is aware of the possibility that Squadron 42 ends up on other platforms. And I think there's also a chance that Arena Commander ends up on other platforms. And I do wonder how that process goes down as CIG steps into more of a publisher role. I guess, no, I think RSI is technically the publishing company and then CIG is the developing company.
Yeah, because the website is Robert Space Industries. So
yeah, so I'm interested to see how that goes down for them as well. But it's good that they own everything, right? And they don't have to answer to somebody else when it comes to that.
That is a very good benefit of this model, is that there's really one company that is making the thing. So they get to make the decisions. They get to determine how they market it. That can also be a problem sometimes because of quote unquote lack of experience or lack of, you know, one thing publishers are good at is publishing games. That's what they do, right? Yeah. So if, you know, and they've done it a lot of these publishers 10, 15, 20 times. So a lot of them are really good. It seems like a lot of them do things okay. It's just you get these examples where it's like, man, if this game could be out from underneath this publisher right now, what would it be? You know?
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch that for people that in other places that can't play Helldivers 2 anymore. It's like, oof.
That does suck. That sucks. You know?
And for the record, I could totally see Arena Commander being like a demo mode in you know, Xbox or something. I don't know about Squadron 42. I think there's a lot of porting that has to happen even for a single player game, but I don't know. By the way, that brings up a question for me. Do you think that CIG will, I guess you'll connect to their services. How much, so there's been this thing for the last, like, I don't know, 8 years, where if you're playing a single player game, sometimes you still have to sign into the website server. You can't play it offline.
Like yeah.
If you don't have an internet connection, you can't play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Squadron 42 will be that?
Doesn't Easy Anti-Cheat have to be connected?
It might. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do that.
If you have the
launcher, is it
going
to be a different launcher for Squadron 42 or the same one?
No, I think it's the same one. I mean, from the launcher they just
released last month. Oh, yeah, they did just update
the
launcher, didn't they?
Yeah, and it looks pretty prepared for other games on it.
Yeah, true.
I don't know if they're going to use that anti-cheat, because maybe that's just a multiplayer component and they don't need it in the single player. It would be great if we could play off, or not even play offline,
wouldn't that be nice?
Like, launch offline.
Go to a park and be on a picnic table and play Squadron 42.
Yeah. I could be playing on the plane during my flights. That'd be sick.
That'd be great, man.
Yeah.
They'd have to store a lot of stuff locally, but it'd be cool if they created some kind of a, if it does have to connect to a network to save your game, or, you know, because of cloud storage for game saves in most games. But if it was like, we're going to save a cache file of your save game until the next time you connect to the network, and then it's going to upload.
That would be awesome. I'd love that. I don't know, man. But Star Citizen, though, that is one that we definitely won't play offline.
No.
But I'm hopefully interested. Not. I'm interested because today's talk is very much about like this game as an MMO, and going by our conversation before, it sounds like you've got experience with that. But I'd love to kind of, you know, I'd like to get everybody who comes on the show to kind of talk about where they came from in gaming and how that led them to Star Citizen. So what's your kind of like, how'd you get here?
Oh man. The first video game I ever played was a game called, I talk about this because I think it's funny when people are like, me too. It almost never happens. But I played a game called Mordor 1.1, The Depths of Dejanon. It was like a little dungeon exploring 2D, you know, dungeon scroller kind of thing. It's kind of like D&D style. It's 1995 it was made, right? Okay. And yes, I'm old, but
it's not that bad. Come on.
that's the first game that I ever played. I played Descent. If I had never gone to a garage sale with my mom when I was a kid and picked up a Logitech Wingman Extreme 3D and a copy of Descent Destination Saturn, the original Descent game, I probably wouldn't be playing Star Citizen, maybe, but probably not. Because I got Descent, I love Descent. I got Descent 2, love Descent 2, and then eventually I got Descent Free Space. And Descent Free Space is what made me love space games. That game right there made me love space games.
What kind of game
I
is
put
it?
Hundreds of hours into
like
it.
A space sim?
Yeah, but like, I mean, not quite like Freelancer, but it's like a space flight single player, you know, it's like if you made Squadron 42 in the year 1999. Maybe not. Okay. I can't remember when it came out. It might have been like 2000, I don't know, 1, 2, something like that. And the flight model wasn't spacey, you know, but the graphics back then were like, oh, this is pretty good, right? It was kind of cool. And you're fighting an alien race, and there's another alien race involved. It was very, like, you know, when I look at Squadron 42, I'm like, oh, it's very, like, Descent Free Space to me. And the story was good in Descent Free Space. And so then there was like Free Space 2.
It's like a Wing Commander competitor?
Kind of, yeah, maybe. Somebody's going to correct me on that, but my memories of it was... My memories of it was very much a single player, like kind of linear story where you play through as like a military, you know, cadet. Okay. And then you make your way through and you get promotions and you get different ships and upgrades and weapons and there's development that happens and stuff like that.
Classic.
So yeah, I mean, you're kind of classic space game, and it was so new and fresh to me back then. So I went from there and I played World of Warcraft for a long time. Okay. I've gone through the ringer. I've played, you know, League of Legends for a long time with some of my friends. Every time I mention playing League of Legends, people are like, ew. And it was like, yeah, yeah, but you play a video game.
Gross.
That frequently just closes all on its own. So I don't know. But yeah, I played that for a while. And I'm somebody who, like, when I play a game, I get super into it. Like, even single-player games, I have a really hard time playing games twice. There's only been a few single-player games, Skyrim, Fallout 4, Deus Ex, that I've played more than once and nice. Enjoyed it the second time. Most games that I like, I play once, I, like, 100% them. I find, like, every little side quest and everything, and then I put the game down for years.
I get you.
You know?
Yeah.
Some people just love to play things over and over and over.
Nah, I, as much as I love it, like, a game could be my favorite game, and I still won't. Is there something about playing it the first couple of times, maybe? Like, I could name the games that I would play again would be, like, Bioshock, Mass Effect, Halo, Deus Ex.
Like, Mass Effect. Oh, Mass
that's
Effect.
That's, like, a very, yeah. Because, I don't know, I'm like you. I just want to get a new experience. You know, I love seeing a game play out in front of me. And
yep.
It's cool like that. I think that's what's kind of gotten me with MMOs. I've never played an MMO before, but having multiplayer games allows that to be different every time, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, you're like a Star Citizen game, that kind of thing. It allows your experience to be just a little bit different this time than it was last time. And you meet different people and you go to different places. And, you know, I think that's like, I'm a bounty hunter in Star Citizen for the most part. You know, I'll do some piracy here and there, whatever, you know, whatever the wind blows. But it's fun to be able to be like, oh, this guy went to this location this time. Oh, this guy's in a cave, you know, which is pretty rare, but that kind of stuff happens. This guy's down in a bunker. This guy's flying in the sky, you know, like whatever it might be. These guys are setting up a honeypot where they're trying to trap bounty hunters. And I've, you know, recognized that. So I'm going to try to work around that and, you know, go on foot with like a railgun or, you know, whatever it might be, right? There's always a different experience and different players and the way they experience it. And that's one of the things I think that makes multiplayer games so cool, but especially cool in Star Citizen, because the game gives you a lot of interesting ways to interact with that and counter what the other person's doing, no matter what they're
right.
doing.
Yeah, I love that. So what specifically then got you introduced to Star Citizen?
Ooh, I have to give credit to a longtime friend of mine, the Geck. They go by the Geck online. And they were like, can I show you this like cool project? And this is like in the year 2013 or 12 or whatever.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I know. And they were like, it's going to release pretty soon. It's like an Elite Dangerous competitor. And yeah. So I backed the game, I think late 2013. Rings a bell? I can't remember exactly. And just kind of let it sit on the shelf. You know, I'd log into when they had like the hangar modules and stuff, I'd log in and check it out from time to time. And that was kind of my Star Citizen track. And then I played like 3,000 hours of Elite Dangerous or something like that, like 2,700 hours. And it was a space game that was sort of an MMO multiplayer thing. I could talk about Elite Dangerous for a while, so I won't. But that was a big part of it. PlanetSide 2. So I've always been somebody, like if you could mix PlanetSide 2 and Elite Dangerous, you'd have kind of what Star Citizen wants to be, obviously different, but
yeah,
the idea of like really merging FPS, you know, content with spaceship content. So those kinds of games always interest me because they give me something that I want, you know. Yeah, they give me something that I like. Being able to interact with lots of other players in an FPS environment is like PlanetSide 2. Something that's persistent. I really like, I can't stand drop-in games. I mean, even Tarkov's kind of fun, but any game that's match-based shooters, match-based looters, that kind of stuff, it just loses me so fast. Because it's like, oh, I'm doing the same exact thing that I did 20 minutes ago.
It's really interesting you say that, because that's what I grew up on. I was very arena shooters in multiplayer, like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and Halo 2 and 3 were probably the cream of my online gaming time.
Oh, yeah.
And then leading
I never
into,
did
like,
much
Titanfall.
Call of Duty. I did a lot of Unreal Tournament, though. Unreal Tournament, Quake, and PlanetSide 2, a lot of PUBG for a while with some friends.
Okay.
So that kind of game, I'm familiar with that. It's just, especially when I'm playing by myself, if I'm not playing with friends, those games aren't fun to me, you know?
I get it. I get that.
So, but if I'm playing with friends, they're super fun because you get to bounce stuff off your friends and stuff like that.
So you're talking about Star Citizen, how it relates to these other games that you've played, which are pretty MMO focused. How does Star Citizen look as an MMO? Is it a unique idea in the market? Does it like have a place where it'll stand out when people are talking about different MMOs? Star Citizen might actually have a unique draw?
Yeah, I think so. I think the vision is. I think the idea is. Right now, it's unique in its visuals and some of its like interactions, and so it's unique in a couple of ways. But it looks a lot like other games. You know, we've talked about this a little bit in our DMs, I think. But Sea of Thieves, for instance, like to me, and again, I haven't put a ton of hours into Sea of Thieves, but to me, it is basically Sea of Thieves in space right now, and that's cool because Sea of Thieves is a fun game. But it's not I hope it's not the vision that Chris and the rest of the team at CIG has for Star Citizen as an MMO. It has to be way bigger than that, you know? I mean, if you've ever played an MMO, you're in it. Typically, when you play an MMO, like, oh, if I want to make it to the end game of this MMO, if I want to experience all this MMO has to offer, I have to play this game a while. I have to dig in and, you know, take the time and take the effort and, you know, go places and do things and learn the game in a robust way and interact with a real economy, you know, interact with hundreds or even thousands of other players. And that is something that Star Citizen doesn't have yet, in my opinion.
You mentioned that you're a bounty hunter.
Let's
talk about what a player would expect right now, because I want to come back to that kind of idea of the MMO that this is going to be. But let's talk about what a player would expect, the detailed idea of if they were jumping into the game fresh, and this is just your standard MMO player, mm-hmm. they're open to some combat, maybe some space and FPS combat. What might be their first couple weeks experience in Star Citizen?
I think this is a good time for this question because it brings up a very high profile gamer that is currently trying out Star Citizen, or has been in the last few days as of this recording. Summit1G on Twitch. Now, granted, he's got people that have been helping him and kind of ushering him into different types of gameplay. So it's not a purely organic, you know, starter interaction for him. But he does play games like that. He plays games in the way that I want to experience it. Let me just experience the game. I'm going to do what I want to do, right?
Yeah.
And you see him digging into PvE and having his criticisms. You see him trying Arena Commander out and you know, giving feedback on that. And then you end up seeing him going, wait a minute. I can just sneak onto this guy's ship, right? You know? And he's that kind of guy, right? Like, yeah. He played Sea of Thieves big time, so for him, that's familiar. And, like, stowing away on ships and this kind of thing. So it depends on the player a little bit. Like, he's a little bit more mischievous than maybe your average player might be who's just checking it out, you know? It very much depends on the mindset you go into with a game like Star Citizen. Because if you go into a game like Star Citizen with a Sea of Thieves mindset, you're thinking, okay, I can stow away on other people's ships. How can I steal other people's stuff? How can I interact with other players? You know, where are the places that I can go to find the best loot? You're thinking of that stuff, right? A lot of players are like, I came from Elite Dangerous where I just had a peaceful life of mining and I want to try out mining in Star Citizen. So what does it take for me to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool that it takes people down those different paths almost right away. But it's frustrating for a player who's like, I just want to play a video game. What do I do? You know, and it doesn't give you a lot of direction. So I think a lot of people end up kind of defaulting to, okay, they look at the mission manager and they see like a mercenary mission. Okay, there's a mission that takes me to a bunker, right? Okay. And maybe they get a little confused with that or whatever. But I think that's where a lot of people end up going, is they start, for the most part, on the solo / PvE side of things. And then I think as they go reaching out for other types of gameplay, they end up finding ways to interact with other players, typically.
Do you think that as this game develops, that will be the general new player path? Do you think that CIG is always going to kind of have this obvious path leading towards PvE combat, or are they going to focus on something else, or do you think it's going to be kind of a, you're plopped down and then everything is sort of equal opportunity and you can go in a specialized direction? Because games really do benefit from a little bit of hand-holding in the beginning, getting people on up to speed, right? But at the same time, there's so many different types of gameplay in this game. How do they decide where to push new players?
Well, I think a good MMO teaches you how to play the game well, and then it lets you play the game. So I hope that Star Citizen gets to a point where the tutorial is less of a one-time thing you forget about and more of a, what was that thing again? Oh yeah, there's going to be a tooltip or a tutorial that I can look up, you know, and figure out how to do this thing. I think that's a good direction to go in. And I think that if you want to make your game an MMO and you want that staying power for your players, that's the direction you take, I think. I think that we hope, and there's a lot of speculation, but we hope that CIG creates kind of starter systems, or a starter system at the least, where it's like a very high security system, kind of low profits. It's a place to learn the game. It's a place to go. There's going to be, you know, hopefully mission givers that kind of give you these missions that give you lots of tool tips and lots of, you know, AR markers and things to teach you. Like, okay, this is how a bunker mission works. This is how a retrieval mission works. This is how you go and trade cargo, you know, where there's an NPC that kind of buzzes in your ear from time to time and says like, all right, you made it to the location. Now go in there and hit up the terminal and buy some cards, you know, teach you how to do these things like an MMO does, so that we can branch out into hopefully other systems or other locations and then start to play the MMO, you know?
Yeah.
I think New World, World of Warcraft, pick an MMO, they have a starting area that teaches you how to play the game. And then from there, it's on to you to... And another part of that is you want your starting area to be robust in a way of like, it teaches you how to do cargo, or it teaches you how to mine, or it teaches you about caves, or it teaches you about city life, you know, teaches you about travel, teaches you about, you know, so you learn all the core concepts of the game so that when you go to the second system, and you land in Pyro, you're like, what the hell do I do now? You know?
Yeah.
You don't want that experience where you haven't taught a player in the starting environment how to do a thing, or how to at least like be ready to do a thing. You want to teach them to be ready to do a thing so that when they branch out to the next thing, they're like, this isn't familiar enough to me that I understand what's going on, but I can learn and you know, go deeper in this path, you know, and I think that's cool.
A good generalized kind of beginner storyline that can dip into every little bit, and like maybe beginner level missions of all that other stuff that's around you. I mean, it's not a mystery. It's not like other games haven't done that before.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What would be
here's a good example, like Fortnite, you know, like the competitive BR Fortnite.
Yeah.
There's a single player game of Fortnite that I think was Epic's original, like the single player game was their, like, that was their kind of baby originally.
The zombie thing. Years.
Yeah. And like that, if you play the single player game with a couple of your friends, which I did, it's fun. It's fun, and it teaches you the building aspect. It teaches you all the aspects you really need to go into the Battle Royale and play that. But I think most people just log in and play the Battle Royale almost immediately.
So what you're saying is that Squadron 42 is the tutorial for Star Citizen.
Yes, and it's going to be all Battle Royale.
God, Star Citizen is just going to turn into a Battle Royale with dancing.
Yes. By the way, I'm going to make people mad in the comments. You ready? I think that Star Citizen could benefit from an in-world or like a real Battle Royale map where they take a big map and they put like 50 players in it, and then it's like a last man standing kind of thing, and they have vehicles and hover quads and stuff like that. Just like PUBG. I think they could take a space and be like, boop, here's a good testing environment for 50 to 100 players to enter. And they could do so much like real world testing with looting and things like that. But anyway, I digress.
That's the joy of the game. I mean, at some point, somebody's going to set that up competitively, just like Daymar Rally does their race. And that's going to be amazing, man. Have you read the Halo books by any chance?
No, I haven't.
There's this really
the games, but not the books.
Okay. There's this really good part of a one called Fall of Reach, which I think is what they're covering in the TV show. And it's like all the Spartans, they're training as kids. Mm-hmm. And the scenario is they take them out, they get them on a dropship, and they just kind of throw them all out into a forest across a certain amount of land and say, you've got to find your people, survive, and get to this place. And that kind of scenario playing out on like Microtech after they bring in the Boreal Stalker, and you've got like all these different survival mechanics going on, something like that or a Battle Royale would be incredible. That'd be awesome. Yeah. And it'd be so much better because when you die, it means something.
Mm-hmm. I hope that Seiji, so that actually brings up a good point about the fauna with like the copium dogs. I call them copium dogs instead of copians. Because, I mean, come on. You can't name them that and expect me not to call it copium.
Copium dogs.
The copium dogs, yeah.
All right, right.
How much copium have we gotten from learning that there were dogs?
A lot of copium.
But anyway, right now, the copians are at certain locations in the PTU, it seems like little localized, you know, there's like little spaces where they're kind of nearby. And it makes me wonder, I hope that CIG gets to a point where they go, you are now a dog on a planet. Survive, like do your thing, you know, and it can go anywhere on the planet and you just run into them. Hopefully that is the case. I don't know if that's possible right now with the technology they have as far as like pathing and stuff like that, because they've been talking a lot about this Rastar stuff and figuring out how NPCs can walk on planets has been a challenge for years. So hopefully, I don't know what that would take, but hopefully it gets to that point where you can plop a copian dog down here and it can live its life in the forest and make its way halfway across the planet, you know, and you could even have migrations and stuff. That'd be so cool.
If they built up this subsumption system and they don't do that, I will be disappointed.
Yeah.
Hopefully they do that.
Like, imagine how cool it'd be to see like a migration of, you know, whatever the cows are. What are the cows called?
Quasi-grazers.
Quasi-grazers, yeah. Like you see a herd of them like traveling across, you know, Microtech or whatever. That'd be so cool.
Good pickings. Mm-hmm. All right, so Star Citizen gameplay. I think we unfortunately got, of course, into what we want it to be, because that's just how it is.
Yeah.
It is still, when it comes to the idea of, at least what traditional MMOs are, when you forget like the sandbox aspects, it's still pretty basic in terms of what new players can do as soon as they jump in, right? At least that's working.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even tell players to do box deliveries.
I don't. A lot of people tell people to do box deliveries and to do...
I used to.
...the illegal surveillance missions where you, like, take out the Comrade, you go to the Comrade and shoot some satellites and stuff.
Yeah.
Those have been really buggy, and the box missions have been super buggy for a long time. Like in 323's PTU, if you go to do an illegal surveillance mission right now, you get a crime stat 3 by the end of it, because you whenever every time you destroy one of the little satellites, it gives you a CS2. And it's like, there's going to be people who are like, take that mission and go do it. And then a player's going to do it and then get really frustrated. And yeah. They're like, the first mission I did made me go to jail. What? And it's just obnoxious. So
yeah.
I usually tell people, it's hard to tell people what to do because there's a different bug with different stuff. You couldn't tell people to do bunker missions in early 321 or maybe even 322. I can't remember. I think it's 321.
Quite a few patches, man.
Yeah, because the NPCs would just disappear or spawn in the ground or fall through the planet, or and then it wouldn't complete. And they'd be like, well, now I came and did a bunker mission this guy told me to do, and it isn't completing, and there's no more NPCs. Like, what do I do now? This game sucks.
Yeah.
And they hang up, you know? And it's difficult because it's all so, like, infrastructure, server-related, like, coding, like just the state of the game, you know, and you always have to give that disclaimer to new players. So it's difficult to tell new players what to do. I think a lot of times I tell new players, like, hey, just take it slow. Just take it slow. There's going to be bugs. You know, try a mission that looks easy and pays low. Give it a shot. It might not complete. That's the game, right?
Yeah.
Like, in you know, and if you have any questions, feel free to ask why it didn't complete or what might have happened or what you might have done wrong or whatever. That's just how every mission is. You're going to have to learn the ins and outs and stuff like that. And it's kind of like the game has to get away from that someday to the point where the game tells you what you did wrong and the game isn't wrong. And the only reason that you fail a mission is because you were wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Of course.
Right now, you can fail a mission because the game is wrong. You can fail a mission because the game doesn't spawn enough enemies or whatever, right? There's a 50 examples of that. And so to become an MMO, a good MMO, you have to get to a point where the game doesn't cause your failure, you do. And then the game does at least an okay job of explaining to you what you failed at. And then you can deduce what you need to do better, you know, to be better at the game to, you know, succeed.
In a
right now,
like,
it doesn't really have that.
Yeah. And in a game like this that's trying to be an MMO, a complicated one at that, there are so many things that can go wrong that if it doesn't tell you that you did it wrong, it's just hard to know. Like, and being an alpha.
Yeah. I went up the staircase and now I'm falling through the planet. What happened?
Right? And you might fall through something or fall off something or glitch out. Like, if you open the cargo bay for your ship, and then you suddenly get blown out the back of the ship. You want to know that's not because the physics grids broke. You want to know that's because there's explosive decompression. And as of right now, if they put in explosive decompression, maybe not now, but definitely like a year or two ago, if that came in, there probably wouldn't be enough effects to let you know that was the case. And then you'd be confused. And it's like those kinds of things make a game harder to enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you have to balance that with, like, CIG is building a game, so they have to try things. Like, this is the time to try stuff. It's like people with the sniper glint thing. Like, I'm one of those people with the sniper glint thing. I know it's a big, like, topic. I think sniper glint can be done well if they do it well. I think it can be a good part of a game like this. Right now, I don't think it's being done well. I think it's just limitations of what CIG is working with. It's not so much their fault or their decision making. It's just what the game and the shaders and everything is giving them right now is what they have. Personally, I think they should leave it out until they have the tools in place to make it right, but that's a whole other conversation. That's the kind of thing that they're dealing with too, is that this is the time to try those things out and go, does this fit in our game? Okay, it didn't fit in our game. A good example of this is the landing splines. You remember the landing splines where if you didn't fly through them, you would either die or get redirected?
Yeah. That's awful.
It was a cool idea. It looked cool. But in practice, players just want to fly to the hangar, and it's not a problem, you know? And so they canned it, they got rid of it, and that was cool. It was a good experiment. They had it around for a patch or two, and then they got rid of it, you know? Wasn't working for them. Let's abandon that one, you know? And the sniper glint could end up that way. They were pretty sure. Like, there was an ISC or something about the landing splines, where they were like, landing splines is the way we want to go. This is what we want to do. Like, they were pretty clear about it. Like, they were like, we're going to put these landing splines in, and it's going to be part of the game, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know exactly what they said about it. And they're kind of doing the same thing with the sniper glint. You know, how temporary it is, we don't know. Maybe it's something that just won't work in the game, like the landing splines, and they'll say, all right, and they'll get rid of it. You know, that might be something that happens. So this is the time to do that, you know?
Reminds me of hover mode. They brought it in, tried it out, didn't work. They brought it out, and they literally will go on camera and be like, it was an idea we wanted to do, but it wasn't the way we wanted to do it, and we pulled it. And it's like, we can talk all we want about how they market this game, and it's poor at times. We can talk about how they talk about this game, how people approach this game, but at the end of the day, it is still an alpha because specifically they're still experimenting with features and trying to build this arguably without an instruction manual. It's not like somebody's done this before. Do you think, though, at this stage, like every, you know, this comes up, it's an alpha, it's in alpha, it's testing these features. Is it too late for that?
No, I don't think it's too late to test some features, especially when you have so far to go. And this is going to sound kind of depressing. If they said, hey, Star Citizen's like pretty close to done, and this is the MMO we want to make, it's going to be one of the worst MMOs of all time. I hate to be that guy. This is not an MMO. And if they said, you know, we're going to release this, this is 1.0 release at the end of 2024, which is not, I don't think that's what's going to happen. But if they did do that, there's not enough time to make this game a good MMO. So you know it's going to be a bad one, if that's the case. There's just not enough time to make it a good MMO. They have a long ways to go to make it an MMO, where there's like a dynamic economy and like, you know, NPCs you can interact with more than once and, you know, mission givers, and there's just way too much to do. So I hope that it takes, like, this is going to sound weird, but I hope that it takes a while before they're like, yeah, we're ready to like kind of get this onto like a beta schedule or whatever they want to call it. I've always called Star Citizen, not always, but the last 2 years or so, I've called Star Citizen, I stopped calling it alpha, I call it early access, because they market it like an early access game. They develop it like an early access game. They treat it like an early access game. One thing that early access games are extremely good at is telling you it's early access when there's a bug and telling you that it's a released game when it's working well. And CIG, I love you, but you guys do that a lot. It's a released game. It's a live service game when it's cool and when it's working good. It's an alpha when it's not working good and when it's buggy. That's not a problem because it's the truth, but that duality is difficult for players to wrap their heads around, especially new players, you know, who are like, hey, I paid $45 and was sold this live service kind of early access style game. What's going on here? Why isn't this working? Well, it's an alpha. It's an alpha. Get over it. You know, it's like, that's such a frustrating argument for me. Yeah. Because like, yes, technically it's like, it's alpha, whatever you want to call it. To me, it's like, they're selling us a video game. It's they call it themselves a live service game. I'm going to call it early access. You know, that's what I call it. That's what it is functionally, even though maybe they don't say that. It's just,
I think it's being
developed and sold like an early access game to me.
I think like maybe 2 years ago, that's they decided to really start pushing in that direction.
Kind of leaning into it a little bit.
Yeah, it was like a year before 3.17.2, I want to say, when they really started to talk about like, oh yeah, we were trying to work on the new player experience. We're getting missions and stuff across the line. And now it feels like with this 3.23 patch and then 4.0 with server meshing, at that point, it's up to the standard of an early access game, I would say.
I mean, if you're somebody, I'm somebody who played the DayZ standalone, like right when I went to early access. I mean, this is a long time ago. And other early access games that you've played for a long time. I think Fortnite was in early access for years, and they made billions of dollars.
Yeah. It was a long time. It's like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, they've made like $12 or $15 billion off that one game, like Epic Games has. And it was in early access forever.
That game revolutionized that company.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Changed everything. It's crazy. Good for them.
Yeah. And we give away free games because Fortnite makes all our money.
Right. Let's talk
just
about...
download our launcher, please.
Buy our games.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the... Let's go back to the Sniper Glint thing, because that's... I think that's in a subject all its own. Sniper Glint, different FPS changes, ship mechanics, and immersion are like the gameplay side of the game, right? And then you've got the more MMO-focused stuff, loot, missions, reputation, player progression. There's like two sides of this development of the game. How are either of those sides going in the mission of the MMO, in your opinion?
You know what's interesting? In MMOs, you spend most of your time interacting with NPCs, AI, your PvE. This is a couple of years ago, but I can't remember if it was CIG or somebody on Twitter. I think it was CIG on Twitter or somewhere, maybe on Spectrum, did like a poll of like, are you PvE focused or are you PvP focused? And it was like 85% was like PvE. The reality, even today, I mean, that's probably shifted a little bit. I think more people interact with other players now than used to. But I think the reality is most players are PvE focused, and it's probably always going to be that way, especially if the game does become an MMO. In MMOs, as much as the PvP people like me would like it not to be true necessarily, most players interact with the game more than the other players, you know?
Yeah,
so to make a game like that, you want to make that enjoyable, you know? And I think, so a Sniper Glint is a good example of this. I think it's cool as hell if I go to a location and an NPC has a sniper rifle and looks at me and I see the glint and I go, oh, there's a sniper up there. Like, that's cool gameplay. Do I think that CIG could like balance that scope, you know, the sniper glint out? Of course, you know, for you want it to be balanced out for PvE and PvP. You could even have a different one for PvE than PvP. I don't know. I don't think they'll do that. I don't think they necessarily should, but you could. So for me, I think that kind of thing, like, that's the direction I think they're taking for it, is like they realize and they know that most players interact with the environment and the AI more than other players. And so for them, they're trying to build that base of the game that says, here's you as 70% of the player base interacting with the game. Let's make that experience as good as we can, as cool as we can, as interesting as we can, as obvious as we can for the player to digest. And then on top of that, we want to layer that player interaction side of things. And how can we balance those two is the biggest challenge. You know, how do you make PvE teach you about PvP? You know,
yeah,
that's been something that I've been a big part of, or not a big part of, a big proponent of in Star Citizen, is like, I think the NPCs need to fly as much like players as possible. I think that when you take a bounty mission as a player for an NPC, that NPC should try to run from you. Or it should do things that a player might do, like quantum travel away, and then the marker follows them and you have to chase them. And then when you take a player bounty, you go, I understand what's going to happen here, you know? And obviously it's going to be a more difficult scenario, but I think the game is not very good at that. It's not very good at teaching you how to interact with other players with its PvE content. And I hope that they continue to make those connections, like making the AI a little bit more player-like or a little bit more lifelike or whatever, as they've been doing for the last couple of years especially. And I think that's a very important part of the game, is to connect those two spaces. So it's not you're a PvE-er or you're a PvP-er, it's you're a gamer and you're playing this game and here's what you're doing right now, you know? How do they bridge that gap? And, you know, some of the ways they've been doing it is good, and some of the ways they've been doing it is like, sure, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely been, I think, hit or miss. That is really important, though, because it's also not just the PvP, but like the sandbox gameplay is so much better if the game has taught you how it works. Because you could,
yeah,
you could go out and find a salvaged wreck, or no, you could go and find mineables right now, but there's nothing in the game that would teach you how to mine. You can't. There's no tutorial, there's no missions, there's no guide in the game itself. You have to either talk to somebody or just kind of experiment and figure it out. There's no mission that drives you through it. And that does seem really important from the overall design of an MMO.
Yeah. It's a tough thing, because we have this like little, what I hope is like a little snippet of the game, you know, and we just want this, you know, we want this massive, you know, go anywhere, do anything. There's always missions to do. There's always things to interact with kind of space. The more you create that space, you know, the more you give players that, I don't know if sandbox is the right word, but you give players that freedom that they want, you know, out of a freelancer-esque MMO, you know?
Yeah. When it comes to the way that they're handling your average loop, like going out and looting and getting stuff and bringing it back and maybe selling it or collecting it, how does that compare to other MMOs you've played? Is that a satisfying experience much in this one?
It's satisfying on the front end. So like finding a cool thing is satisfying. Like you find a railgun at a bunker, you're like, sweet, a railgun. Now what? You know? Does this enable me to go to a place and use it? Like, what do I do with it? Do I try to sell it to a station, to another player? You know, what do I do with this? So there's a lot of work, I think, that needs to be done on the back end of some of those interesting experiences. Like, I found a cool thing. Here's what I do with it. A good example of this, I think, is Gasping Weevil Eggs. If you find an SCU of Gasping Weevil Eggs, you've struck it. Right? Like, you struck it rich, kind of.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling that it gives you. And that's cool. The only thing you can do with that Gasping Weevil Eggs box is sell it at a certain, you know, wherever it might be, right? It'd be cool if there was many different things, both with the game and with other players that you could do with that. Because like I have an SCU of Gasping Weevil Eggs. I can find a location that's kind of dangerous and sell it myself, but I'm kind of a noob, so I don't really know what to do there, right? But I read about this thing where you can give this to another player and then he's more equipped to go and sell it in the dangerous place. So I'm going to sell it to him and then he's going to go, you know, whatever he wants to do with it. A lot of players don't do that. They just kind of look up, what do I do with it? And it becomes a one player interacting with one object situation, right? So mm-hmm. It's instead of player interacting with player, interacting with the environment in a certain way, or a player working with a player to, you know, that kind of thing. And
yeah,
piracy, I think, pushes us towards that, where it's like players working together for a common goal and interacting with other players and the game in that way. So that's why I think piracy, when it's working, like when piracy is, when it happens, is one of the coolest interactions in the Star Citizen, because it engages all of that. Piracy, to me, makes game in those moments feel more like an MMO than almost anything else you can do in the game, no matter what side of it you're on, winning or losing, you know? And I think CIG has a ways to go in that, like how to naturally teach players, like, you've gotten to a place or you found a thing. Here's the several options you can take with that thing, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time when you find a thing, it's either, hey, I found a cool war medal in your pocket. Never think about it again.
All right, put it on.
Unless you're Paul Shelley, then you think about it every day.
Yeah. Dreams about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how you can naturally inform people of that stuff without just hitting them over the head with, you can do this, and you can do that,
yes.
You can do this.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's actually a really good point, too, is in improving and encouraging more player-to-player interaction, basically the only thing you can do right now is run up to somebody and add them to your party. You can transfer money, you can't trade objects, you can't give people ownership over objects, you can't share permissions, you can kind of spawn mission beacons, but they're not great. There's just not a lot of ways to get players to work together. We talked about how most players are kind of solo players for these kind of games. Do you think that there is an opportunity for CIG to convince those solo players to still play with other players?
Yeah, they have opportunities. I think a good example of this is like multi-crew ships. As multi-crew ships move towards requiring crew rather than just like, hey, you have another guy, here's your turret gunner, right? Like, when it starts to require crew to be good at what it does, I think that'll push a lot of players that have some of these ships to be like, hey, man, let's get a crew set up and have some fun together. You know, the Reclaimer is a good example of this, I think. The Reclaimer is soloable, but it's one of the most mind-numbing experiences of your life, in my opinion. So getting a crew for the Reclaimer, like, I wouldn't be in a Reclaimer if it was just me, you know. But if I do it with 3 or 4 friends, it's pretty fun. I'm running around the ship. I'm moving cargo. You know, I'm controlling a claw. I'm breaking down ships. I'm piloting. There's lots of things you can do, especially as like, engineering comes around and things like, there's a lot more things to control and things to defend and things to fix. I think multi-crew ships is a big part of that. I think it's something that a game like Elite Dangerous really missed out on, because they even have like a multi-crew mode where you can join another person's ship, but you literally just fade to black and you're in a seat in the other person's ship. You can't run around the ship. There's not a lot you can interact with. You can play turrets. You can be in a separate fighter, which is the opposite of multi-crew, because you're in a fighter now.
Yeah, that's
outside the ship. It's cool, but it just misses on the depth. And if Star Citizen can make depth of gameplay with multi-crew gameplay, I think they'll push a lot of players naturally towards that let's work together kind of gameplay. You know, let's do this thing as a group rather than just solo. You know?
I hope so. Whether it's that or like you were saying, just passing a package to somebody who's better equipped to go somewhere, I do really hope that we are not stuck in this, everybody is siloed in their own gameplay. That's something I hated going from, like I said earlier, playing Halo in the 2000s. Everybody was on voice comms in those games. And then you jump forward 10 years and they're almost dead. Nobody's really talking. And I really don't want to play in an MMO where there aren't people communicating with each other.
Well, and it doesn't help that there's no org channel. There's no in-game org stuff. So that's a huge part, is like in-game org chat and in-game org organization is huge. I'll bring up Elite Dangerous again. When Elite Dangerous got their wings, or no, it's not wings, it's their org stuff, their guild stuff. When they got that set up in game, you go into a menu to manage it, which is fine. But they have a specific chat channel in the game. Anywhere you are in the game, you can chat with your org mates, you can chat with your guild mates. And that too is a huge piece of an MMO, because every MMO that I've ever played, if you're in a guild or if you're in an org or outfit, whatever you want to call it, outfit chat, guild chat, org chat, it's always popping if you're in a big one, right? Or if you're even in a medium one that's active, it's always like people talking to each other. Your friends, that's how you make friends in an
MMO.
Is it
chaotic?
It can be in some of the big ones. But most MMOs, I like to join like a medium. If I'm in an MMO, like PlanetSide 2 is a good example. My outfit had 150 people in it, you know? On ops nights, we would get like 30 or 40 people, you know, in the platoon working together. Large in PlanetSide would be hundreds.
Okay.
Maybe, a couple thousand. I think a good example would be like the Enclave or Angels of Death or some of these other ones. TENC was another one. You PlanetSide 2 players know what I'm talking about.
I see.
Where there's like a couple thousand people in your outfit and there's just always outfit chat rolling by, you know? Like an outfit chat or like an org chat in game, giving you a channel that you could that you can tab to, would do two things. It would give you the ability to almost always get a group of people together whenever you wanted to. And it would give you training on how to use the global chat and how to tab through different channels. Eventually, you would see the direct message channel. Eventually, you would see the, not ship channel, but you would see the various channels you could scroll through, the party chat and things like that. Then that would be like, it would be a twofold thing. It would teach people about the social side of the game. And I think naturally that kind of, like having an org chat would teach people about like VoIP, you know, talking to each other with microphones. And I think it would bring back a lot of that MMO communication quality that you were like is kind of missing in Star Citizen. On top of that, it's up to CIG to make VoIP work.
Yeah, dude.
And that has been a bit of a challenge for the last couple of years.
So, I bet you it's something server meshing that's stopping it.
Who knows, man? Who knows?
But yeah, it's that's a big part of it. And that's a good point you made in that we were talking about these missions that would train people on the game and how it works. That's like the org chat would be that training of how the rest of voice comms works.
You learn to communicate so you communicate more.
I
think that's
one.
You don't just hop in. I mean, some people do, but you don't just hop in a car and take off in it, you know? And, you know, because you can be like, hey, you see that thing over there? That's a car. That's called a car. You can drive that, you know? And then somebody gets in and then they crash into the nearest light pole, right? But if you're, you know, if you teach somebody to drive, just life teaches you how to drive a car, kind of. You watch TV and you see how people drive, or you watch other people drive. As a kid, you spend time in the passenger seat while your parents are driving, so you kind of learn about that. Or like me, you'd be on the way to church and your mom would want to put on her makeup, so she would be like, hey, take the wheel for a second. You know, that kind of thing, it teaches you about driving a vehicle. It teaches you about driving that car, so that when it becomes time for you to do that, I want to engage in this driving a car thing, you're more ready to do that. You know, you can dive into it a little bit better, you know, because life has taught you a little bit about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's kind of missing in Star. Nobody teaches you how to fly your ship. Nobody, not really. You just kind of have to get in and bounce around in your hangar until you figure it out. And that is something that MMOs, a good MMO typically does well, is it gives you the tools to jump into a new profession or jump into a new thing just by playing the early side of the game, you know?
Yeah.
And Star Citizen, despite having a tutorial, is not particularly good at that. And so I think as it transitions more to an MMO, it needs to be. Especially with a game like Star Citizen, where there's just 1,000 things to learn, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of conversation about the game being a sim versus being a game and what's being added and how it's changing that. There are a lot of systems in this game, too, that make it a pretty unique experience. Obviously, I'm definitely in the camp of, like, they can't do too much hand-holding. A lot of this needs to be organic and well put into the game. That's not necessarily what we're calling for, but some things do need to change with Star Citizen. Nah, I won't say change. Be realized for the game to reach the average player. And a lot of stuff kind of like Death of a Spaceman with the way that, you know, you kind of have the permadeath. Time to kill is very long. It's a full loot game. It's dangerous. Engineering causes multi-crew stuff. A lot of these systems could turn away average players. Do you think that they can still hit that audience, or are they going to struggle with that?
Well, this is just an aside, but the time to kill thing, I think a lot of people were super worried about it because they changed the time to kill before they changed the thing that changed time to kill. I'll try to explain. They increased time to kill based on the fact that half of your bullets bounce off your enemy. That was in 322. In 323, your bullets don't bounce off of magazines and grenades and weapons and backpacks. They pass through those things. So I would say time to kill got increased by, I don't know, 50% or 50%, maybe 60% in 322, and then it got decreased by another 30, by about 30% in 323, because all of your bullets are now doing damage to the spot that it's hitting, which is huge. It's such a massive change. TTK is way better in 323.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an aside, but what needs to change? That's a tough one. I think full loot is a big one. I think right now the game kind of serves loot on a platter to you. Like every time you do a bunker mission, you're like, I have 10 sets of armor to choose from right now. And that makes it kind of like, I think I just said this last night. I was doing some bunkers and I was like, man, it just kind of feels like, even though the NPCs are wearing all different things and you can find like cool, you know, it just kind of feels, I don't know, it's like every NPC just feels like, oh, here's another.
It's all standard.
Yeah, and I don't know how to do, I don't know how to change that. Maybe it's just loot pool tweaks and stuff. That's a tough one. That's a tough one for me because you don't just want to put a box on the ground somewhere. Because if you do that, you've created Tarkov, you know, where it's like, I can go to this place and I always know the kind of loot I can get. And I know that there's a box that's going to be right here and here and here. Like Security Post Gray is like this. I know where almost every loot box spawns at Security Post Gray. And how do you combat that? You know, do you just make less of them and randomize them a little bit more?
Do you
make less of them with more interesting stuff? What
like
do you do with that?
You know? Route, right? You add in stuff to regular storage containers in places where you'd find, like the refrigerator, you should be able to open and find some kind of like a water or snack or something.
Yeah. I talked about that last night too, actually, come to think of it. I was at one of the new, not distribution centers, one of the new mission areas where you can go. I think it's a outlying distribution center, whatever they call it. And the PC, HDPC, I think is what it's called. And I saw a toolbox laying on the ground. And I'm like, I think I said the exact words, for this to be an MMO, I should look at that toolbox and find crafting tools in it.
Yeah.
Like that, like, because it's a toolbox that's sitting there on the ground that I can open. I should be able to loot that and find engineering tools or crafting tools or whatever. Like that is an MMO. When you find something and you look at it and what is inside of it makes sense to that gameplay. Because then if I'm somebody who's just purely combat focused, I don't care about engineering or whatever, you know, I don't care about having tools. I don't need them. I look at it and I go, I'm not going to loot that. I make that decision, right? Right now you open every box because every box might have what you want in it. It might have a hacking chip. It might have a, you know, if you open every medical box, if you need a med pen. And it's like, that's kind of, it's cool, but it would be cool if it was more. Another good example of this is there are these big kind of medical crates. They have a big plus sign on them. And they're all over the place. They're in bunkers and whatever. And you open those and you know what's going to be inside of it. It's going to be medical supplies. That's cool. But they need to transition from that to another example is at this HDPC location. There are these medical, it literally says like medical supplies on it. stuck on the wall. It's like a first aid kit. I would rather loot that and find medical supplies than loot a box that was placed there by a dev. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is kind of sitting on this crate in the middle of a war zone, right?
So then
I want the game to naturally, like, a player is going to look at something. Tarkov is a good example. And like you said, Starfield is actually a good example. If I open a fridge, I expect there to be food inside. You know, if I open a medical kit, I expect there to be some medical supplies inside.
Yeah, yeah.
If I open a toolbox, I expect there to be some tools inside. And to me, that kind of builds an MMO. When the game teaches you about loot by just being a game. You know, by just, it is what it is, and it makes sense logically. You know, instead of like, hey, here's a weapons crate. It might have a piece of armor in it. Or whatever.
Hey, folks. Thanks for listening to this episode. Unfortunately, this is where the software kind of messed up and stopped recording. So I'm going to suggest that you check out the next episode of Launch Sequence, which is basically what you just listened to, but a little more refined and with some more topics. It's still me in Zero State, so I hope you enjoy it. See you there.